He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday, December the 8th. Let's see, that means 26 shopping days until Christmas edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a fee-based only nationwide registered advisory firm and financial planning firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. You know, the market spent last week building in a rate cut. Now it's going to sit here and wait and twiddle its thumbs until Wednesday. The rumor is we'll get a rate cut, and if we don't get one, then the Grinch stole Christmas once again in the form of Jerome Powell. Right now, the Dow is down 100 points, 47,854. The NASDAQ is up 33. Little action in the chip stocks today. We'll get to that. NASDAQ's at 23,615. S&P is about flat, down 5 points right now to 68.65. We've got the Russell 2000 small cap index down today. Actually, now it's up 10 points. The bond market, 4.15. That's too high in my book. I think interest rates need to come down more. Gold is down just a skosh. Bitcoin is rallying just a little bit. It's up 2,600 to begin a new week. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. I believe it was 2019. Oh, we were all in a festive mood, you know. The candles were the chimney with care. The cookies were set by the chimney with care. And
end of 2018. Yeah, yeah.
Was that when it was?
Yeah, going into 2019 ended up being a great year, but yeah, 2018 is that 20% bear market at the end.
Yeah, and Christmas Eve, the Dow was down 1,000 points. Yep. And, Jerome Powell left a lump of coal, in our stockings and bah humbug. Let's just hope he doesn't do it again. You know, he has not really said much since the last meeting when he said, don't be counting on a December rate cut. And I haven't really heard him change that stance at all. Of course, he's got a whole board there, FOMC committee. Will vote on it.
Yeah, I mean, the Grinch, I don't know if he'll make an appearance, but he made an appearance in the newsletter, in your newsletter this weekend.
Yes, I did say, will he do it again? You know, he did it in 18. Will he do it again? He's on his way out in 2026. And I would just say that the market would not be too happy if the Fed were not to deliver that quarter point rate cut. So I think there's just a little bit of risk going into Wednesday. I'm going to keep some hedges in place just in case. We closed out the week on kind of a dull note, but like I say, I think the last 2 weeks the market was building in a rate cut. That's the rumor. The news will come out on Wednesday, and we'll see how they react to the news depending what it is. And I think the market aggressively built in a rate cut over the last couple of weeks. Now, we begin the week. To me, this is the key number. It's not where the S&P 500 is. It's not where the NASDAQ is. It's that forward P.E. ratio of the S&P 500, which I think is going to be a ceiling for the market. We're at 22.61 as we begin a new week. The five-year average is 20. 23 has been the top recently. So we don't have a lot of room to maneuver. We'll see if we get back to that 23 level and how the market reacts, if and when we do. But we begin the new week at 22.61. That's a number I look at every day. That's the forward P.E. ratio. That's the current price of the S&P 500 divided by the earnings estimates over the next 12 months, and you get a forward P.E. ratio. And again, I've showed a chart of that thing, and the five-year high is 23. We got to 23 recently, just a bit over it. And the market went through a pretty steep correction, especially Bitcoin. Bitcoin went through a 35% correction, went into a bear market. And the other indexes were down about 5.5% during that time period when he said, I don't think we'll get any more rate cuts this year. Don't count on one in December. And we hit that 23 level. Okay, so those are a couple of big barriers sitting out there. Kevin Hassett, who supposedly will be the guy, he's going to be Santa's helper that will take over hopefully next year when the Grinch's time is up. Hassett sees a 25 basis point rate cut. Now, he has no say in that. He's obviously jawboning good old Jerome Powell. And he backs Bessent's proposal on Fed governance. Now, I didn't know this. Most of the Fed governors don't even live in the area where they're a Fed governor.
Right, like yeah.
They're all in Washington and New York, and Bessent wants them to at least have lived in their district where that they represent, whether it's Minneapolis, St. Louis, Ballard, others. He wants them to at least live there for 3 years and know what the economy is like in their neck of the woods. I mean, that's the whole point of having Fed governors around the country, right, Barry?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it all the time, you and me, boots on the ground, right? I mean, last weekend, for you said that the shopping was up, and yeah, it was, because I probably drove around the parking lot, a bunch while the women and my wife went to go shopping.
Yeah, yeah.
I never found a spot. I just kept going in circles. Finally, finally picked them up after they got a couple of deals.
My father used to drop the women off at the mall. Santa Anita racetrack,
right,
and he'd head over at the track and bet some horses, trying to make some Christmas money to make the holiday season a little merrier.
Get some coming in the front door and some other going out the back door.
Yeah,
right there,
he was not a bad gambler, though. He would make, he'd come out of there, hey, I made 600 bucks today. That was a lot of money back then. Now, and it's here's what Bessent said. He said, and this makes no sense at all. He says most of the people that get to vote on the interest rates are the people who live in Washington and the people who live in New York. He says we need to change that. I mean, that's not going to change overnight, but over time, the St. Louis Fed guy should live in St. Louis for at least 3 years, and the Minneapolis guy.
At least in the region. Yeah, I mean, at least in the region, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm totally on board with Bessent on that. Okay, so that's where the focus is going to be. Now, we have a few more hot spots in the world that I always bring up when a new one rears its ugly head. Thailand launched airstrikes on Cambodia as Trump-backed ceasefire collapses. Now, I didn't even know that these two were going at it, but it's a border war. It's an argument over where the line is, and, you know, you never like to see that, but that falls under the wars and rumors of war category of our show on a daily basis. And, of course, Putin said, you know, why don't you just give us the rest of the Donbass region, Ukraine? We control 80% of it now. If you don't give it to us, we'll take it by force. Japan's GDP contracts sharply to a 0.6% contraction. Normal wages jump 2.6, more than normal. And you know what? That's an untold story. That's an underneath the surface story of how much Japan's interest rates have gone up this year. And they continue to rise. They bolted higher last week. And the reason that's important is when Japan's rates bolted higher, so did the rest of the world. That's why we're at 4.15 right now. Germany bolted higher, Italy bolted higher, Greece, Brazil. A world recession could be brought about by Japan, which has a major influence on the global economy.
Right, and the reason being is Japan has had low interest rates for almost 0% interest rates for essentially 25 years.
They had negative rates recently.
Yeah, and so what they so the carry trade, you borrow in yen and then you invest, buy dollars or other dollar denominated assets or other assets of the world. And so as interest rates go up in Japan, that money flows back to Japan because it's earning some interest there. Also, usually interest differential will push the yen up. So it's a big deal.
And it's now another major hotspot in the world as Chinese fighter aircraft buzzed Japan military jets and pointed their radar at them for the first time. So keep your eye on Japan in 2026. When we come back, Oppenheimer has a very lofty target price for next year. We'll take a look at that when we come back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, I would say over the last couple of years, I've probably had 50 or more, maybe even 100, somewhere between 50 and 100 companies approach me, Barry, or reach out through my representatives to buy me out, right, and for me to go to work for them. And one of those was Oppenheimer in New York City. I was kind of flattered, hey, Oppenheimer's a big firm. And I had a one-hour Zoom with the CEO of Oppenheimer. They offered me quite a signing bonus to come on board with them. And things were going swimmingly until they said, but we manage the money here. We don't let you. I mean, we've got our own people. And that, for me, it's just, then I don't want to come to work tomorrow. This is what I enjoy. I like doing it all. I like doing the radio show. I like, I invented my Best Stocks Now app, and I feel
when
like.
You've got your way of doing it.
My way of doing it, and they have their way of doing it. And when I look at their target price for next year, I can see, I don't really agree with their way of doing it. Okay, their target price for the end of next year is $8,100. I go, how in the world do they get to that? Well, they're taking the same consensus earnings that everybody else is out there, around $305 for 2026, $305 for 2026 per share, which would be a record. You got to remember, we were at $60 per share back in 2009 before this all began. And they're multiplying that by 26.5, a forward P.E. ratio of 26.5. Well, we haven't seen a forward P.E. ratio of 26.5 ever. I mean, maybe back in 2000 we did. Now, the P.E. ratio, yes, is 26.5, but not the forward P.E. ratio. And that gets them to a target price of $8,100. Me, I'm using a multiple or forward P.E. ratio of 22, which, look, the five-year average has been 20. How do you justify, in their case, and I'm sure they would call and argue with me and back up their point of view, they're using 26.5. So if you take $305 per share in earnings and multiply it by 26.5, you get a target price next year, 12 months from now, of $8,100, which is 14% upside potential. I'm way below that. The average target price out there on the S&P 500 is lower than that. And most people, I would say, are in the 7,500 range. But, okay, they're at 8,100. And I've always said, choose your gurus wisely. I think Oppenheimer, from my book, is better than most. They're not the kind of guys that are or gals that are out there buying these big soggy stocks of yesteryear. But I don't really like their math on their target price. That's just me. Now, Last week it was Broadcom getting good news being linked in with Google on those Meta chips, right? And, of course, Google had a very good week because now Google, or has had a good 2 weeks, because Google is now in the AI chip business. But Google does not make chips. They design chips. Who's going to make the chips? Broadcom. And so that was a huge win for Broadcom, being Google's partner in making, you know, billions of dollars worth of chips for Meta. Well, this week, it's Microsoft discussing custom chips, not with NVIDIA, but with Broadcom. So there's another win for Broadcom. Microsoft is reportedly discussing plans to co-design, okay, co-design custom chips with Broadcom to meet growing demand amid intensifying competition in the AI space. And we've always said that eventually NVIDIA's biggest hurdle that they'll eventually face is competition coming in. And the race is on. There's no question about it. I see that Baidu is going in China is going to spin off their AI chip division. They're in the race. You had the Chinese or the Chinese. They call it the Chinese NVIDIA. It's not public here in the U.S., but it's raising.
They're little dragons that they call them.
Yes, it's raising money big time back in China, and you've got Alibaba with their own AI chip that they're developing. Eventually, it's just, you know, it's inevitable, just like Tesla couldn't hold the EV market in the world forever. Now he faces a lot of competition. So, Broadcom today, AVGO, which we have a big position in, AVGO is up, it's up 2.1%, but it's hitting an all-time high, and it's closing in on $2 trillion now. It's at $1.89 trillion, and I don't think you can count out AMD either in the chip race. For me, one of the big winners is ASM Lithography, ASML, because it doesn't matter if...
they don't have much competition.
Well, it all has... All roads lead through ASML's equipment for making the chips and a few other smaller players that are involved with ASML.
What was that small one that we used to own years... I think it was in either Ultra Growth or Emerging Growth. It was out of... I thought it was out of California. It was like a little... It's a little chip maker, too. I'm trying to remember them.
Well, we own Coherent, which makes a lot of the lasers involved in making those chips.
Okay.
But yes, but we have other chip stocks that are on the outskirts of town of ASM Lithography, because ASML needs other contractors to do some of the other equipment involved. And another beneficiary, because it's associated with all the AI chips, are the memory chip makers. And that would be a Micron and Samsung. Samsung is not really investable, though. You look at a chart of Samsung, it's very weird. I mean, institutions aren't really able to get in there and buy, and especially little individual investors. Samsung is really not a tradable, viable stock at all. And the third one is SanDisk, which has had a good run. And I want to say SanDisk recently went into the S&P 500 after coming public again. It went private there for quite some time. So there's a big win for Broadcom to begin the new week. And the drama goes on in Hollywood where the Trump weighs in and says, I don't know about that Netflix Warner Brothers deal. He says that gives them a lot of market share. So we don't know if that would get by the scrutiny of antitrust. But you also have a third player in there, this Skydance, which is Paramount. They're doing a hostile bid. They're not giving up. You know, even though Time Warner chose Netflix, they were the highest bidder. This thing is far from over, and, you know, we'll just have to see where it ends up. But Hollywood is being reimagined and being disrupted by the streamers. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, you know, Elon Musk was raising money for SpaceX, and it was in the news that it was reported that he was doing it at an $800 billion valuation, just shy of a trillion. And he rebutted that. He came back and says, no, that's not the correct value. So, meaning it's not that high. He also said that NASA is only about 5% of our business, whereas others were saying it was going to be a huge portion of the business. But that doesn't keep Kathy Wood from saying SpaceX's valuation will be $2.5 trillion by 2030. Well, let's see, 26, 27, 28, 20. That's just 4 years from now, Barry. And he says it's, so she sees it quadrupling. Now, she has exposure to SpaceX, which is a private company. They were also saying that it's the most valuable private company out there if it's worth $800 billion. And Musk says it's not. I would say the most valuable private company right now is OpenAI. But anyways.
Anthropic, right? Probably Anthropic's got to be up there, I would imagine.
Yes. And so she's another one I don't agree with too often, especially a $2.5 trillion. Of course, it's in her best interest. She owns SpaceX and her ARKK fund. There's been a little pressure on Eli Lilly. Some people have been asking me about it. Well, they've been lowering their price recently. They're trying. I think it's a good thing because I think the addressable market out there is enormous, pardon the pun, and I think that the price is a bit of a barrier to a lot of people. So they lowered their price on the starting 2.5 milligram vial to $299 per month. It used to be $349. So they basically lowered their price on this on the doses, and they made the deal with Trump to make it available on Medicare, which is a huge win. But the prices had to come down a little bit. And I don't really see that. I just see it increasing their market share and getting it out there more and more and more and making it more accessible to more people. That's the way I look at it. So, you know, look, these stock, Lilly's gone through a lot of sell-offs. And then it hit a trillion about 2 months ago, a month ago, shortly after my article there that it's going to be the first trillion-dollar drug company. I actually said that quite 2 years ago. And boom, it did hit a trillion. Now it's backed off. It's not a trillion anymore. But I am still very bullish. They've disrupted the entire diet industry, which is a huge, huge industry. They've totally disrupted it. Who wants to go to a meeting every Wednesday night or whatever and count calories or keep report cards on everything that they put in their body when a shot in the stomach once a month works? Okay, so that's just the way I see it. Chernobyl's.
Yeah, forget it. Forget a cheat day. I mean, just do it cheap with the shot, right?
Yes, and I will just say that your grocery bill will go down considerably, and going out to dinner and all this and that, you get full a lot faster. You still enjoy what you're having, but, you know, you're not going to eat all these enormous portions. You can't do it. You know, you reach a point where I'm full. Quicker than you did before. Chernobyl's radiation shield has been damaged by drone strikes. There's your scary story of the day. You know, they built a shield around Chernobyl to contain the leaking radiation. It got hit by a drone strike, and now that shield has been compromised. So that's not a good thing.
That's what scared me the most about this whole thing. And I was trying to go back in history, and I don't know if this has happened. I don't know if we've really had a war that's occurred around nuclear power plants, right? I
mean, well,
think about
you
it.
Know,
I'm
we're
to go back in history,
yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's pretty. Seems like it'd be easy to happen.
The
like
same
that.
Thought has occurred to me as we ramp up nuclear
right.
energy. They become a target for
exactly.
Rogue
right
nations
here.
And. A terrorist. I mean, what could be worse than spreading radiation throughout America? So I would just say that I hope all of this nuclear expansion comes with heavy, heavy security to protect those things from such a horrible, horrible accident that could occur.
Yeah. Every new nuclear power plant comes with a Patriot missile battery, I guess, right?
Man, I'll tell you what, that's just a scary thought. And, you know, I mean, Russia's, I'm sure, I'm sure they're a lot more lax about all of this than they were. But I remember when that first happened, and it was the cloud, the radiation cloud hit Sweden, and it was going around the world. That was a scary time.
So there's a document, I mean, not a documentary, but it's a series about, you know, came out in recent years, I believe, in HBO about Chernobyl, and it was a good for somebody who was only, you know, I don't know, it was the early 80s, right, and I was, you know, young kid at the time, so it was interesting to catch back up and see how, you know, see what it was about.
Yeah, oh, the people that lived in the vicinity, it wasn't good. And now, you know, Japan also, they shut down all of theirs after that Fukushima, but they're firing up theirs again, so there's going to be radiation risk. That's the risk that comes along with nuclear energy.
How's those iodine prices?
Yeah. Earnings week ahead. Adobe, GameStop, Oracle, Broadcom, and Costco. I've noticed how weak Costco's stock has been recently. Oracle stock has been weak. There's a lot of people that say they paid too much to get in on the AI game. Adobe's been very weak. They're deemed as one of the losers in AI. And that's another thing. I mean, the billions that we're throwing at AI and the resources we're throwing, what's the ultimate outcome of all of this? We seem to be all in as a world, as a global community, and as a nation, and just spending unlimited amounts of money on AI. What's the ultimate goal? To lose your job to an AI robot? I don't know. But we're all in on it, and I don't know. Sometimes I think, is this our Tower of Babel? I don't know. It's just there's some scary thoughts that go along with AI. So,
well, the
anyways,
amount of open AI is amount of you know, money. Basically, the amount of stuff they have to do.
Yeah,
is a lot. I mean,
and the energy that it consumes is alarming, and the resources mm-hmm. we're committing to it. So, anyways, there's still pretty important earnings reports ahead here. This week, along with Wednesday, what happens Wednesday? The Fed decision will be announced. Is it Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah, Wednesday. Wednesday.
So they start meeting tomorrow.
That's right.
And then Thursday is usually his press conference, or do you think he does that after? He does it after the announcement?
Usually going to be 2 o'clock. Yeah, usually 2 o'clock, I think, is the announcement, and around 2:30 is usually the meeting, or usually the speaking engagement. So it'll be all eyes will be watching.
This will be really the last really heavy week of the year with economic reports and earnings reports. Okay, now we've got a big winner in the biotech patch, sickle cell anemia. Fulcrum Therapeutics, FULC. I would say this has been a pretty good year for the biotech industry. Mostly it's been buyouts, though. Not new drugs. Mostly it's been consolidation and big drug companies buying up promising biotechs to stuff their pipeline. But Fulcrum is the stock of the day. It right now, FULC, on this news, it was up 72% last time I looked. Now it's up 67%. It's a smaller one. Another winner there in the biotech patch. It's really a dangerous game to play, buying a few individual biotechs. But then I look at the biotech ETF is up like 8 or 9% so far this year. So it's a hard sector to play, to invest in. Carvana's going into the S&P 500. That's kind of surprising there. I'm not a big fan of Carvana, but it seems to be a meme stock. They seem to like that stock, the meme players. It's kind of replaced GameStop as the one. The other one is CRH, which is a cement. I believe that's a cement company, CRH, going into the S&P 500. Yardini turns less bullish on the Magnificent Seven as the growth moderates. I think I would be on board with that. I don't think you're going to see the same leadership stocks. You're not going to see the torrid runs in Palantir and NVIDIA and CrowdStrike and the others that you saw this year. I do think the market will spread out a little bit more in 2026. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. I think another big story in 2026 that we're going to have to watch very, very closely is the jobs picture. UBS may implement up to 10,000 additional job cuts by 2027. And while we're arming AI and we're in the AI race, there's going to be a lot of jobs lost.
The AI agents are coming.
Yes, the AI agents are coming, and they're knocking at your door with pink slips. We've replaced you. We don't need benefits. We don't need health care. We don't need paid vacation and all of this and that.
We don't need brains.
We think we're going to have – are we digging our grave with this AI? I don't know. But we have to be very – the recession will start. We haven't had one since 2008. It will start with layoffs and initial jobless claims increasing, and we will continue to watch that very closely. Now, the most recent initial jobless claims report was under 200,000, which is extremely low. So right now there's absolutely no signs out there, although we have seen some increasing layoffs, and we did see the unemployment number move up to 4.6% recently. Okay, so that's something we got to watch. I think another one for me, another hot spot, as I was doing my newsletter on Saturday, I saw breaking news that another one of these private credit firms, a big one, was in big trouble. They had to you can't get, there's no liquidity right now because a lot of these loans that we own underneath are not performing and we're in trouble. I can't remember the name of it, but it was one of the big providers of private credit. Now that has not stopped. They are going full speed ahead with this. Invesco, which is a big, big company, I believe out of Denver, they announced a strategic partnership with the alternative investing specialist LGT Capital to develop multi-alternative private market solutions, which I am not a fan of. Now, I said all through 2007, 2008 that this whole mortgage thing is not going to end up well. And it put us into recession, and it caused a 53% sell-off in the S&P 500. I think that the next big recession, the biggest risk to our financial markets right now is this swelling in this private credit garbage, gobbledygook mess that I wouldn't touch with a 27-foot pole, and they're not the only ones. Jefferies is acquiring a 50% interest in Hildene Holding Company, the parent of credit-focused asset manager Hildene Capital Management. They're an alternative asset manager focused on credit investing with $18 billion under management. And once again, you could call it whatever you want. It's private credit. It's loaning money to smaller individuals that can't get it through the normal channels. You're taking on that risk. They're offloading the risk, the people that are selling this garbage to you. And they're telling you, where else can you get double-digit returns? That's what Bernie Madoff was selling, double-digit returns, 12% a year. Yeah. You get 1% a month no matter what. I'm not saying it's a Ponzi scheme. I'm saying the risk is off the charts. When we see a bond offering over 6%, you're stepping into deep doo-doo. Yes, you're stepping into deep water. Double-digit returns? Wait a minute. Now you're getting out there on a limb that's going to snap at some point in time. No question about it. So that would be my other prediction in 2026, is to not only watch the jobs market, but watch this mushrooming of private credit and private equity, too, by individual investors. I'm totally against that. CoreWeave to raise $2 billion via convertible senior notes offering. That's another bit of a red flag, is these big tech AI companies going to the debt well to tap. We've seen several of them do it. Meta floated bonds recently. Somebody else, a few others floated bonds. And now these little guys like CoreWeave, $2 billion convertible senior notes offering.
Oracle did. Didn't we look at an Oracle?
Oracle. I don't Might have been Oracle. Enough, yeah. Would you buy a convertible bond from CoreWeave? I'd have a very difficult time with that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if it works out well, it's going to trade like it'll trade like a stock, right?
Pretty much.
And so in that sense, it's like, you know, why not just buy the stock, right? In this sense, the convertible bond on CoreWeave, I mean, the problem is you may have more dilution down the road, because you know, they're obviously, seems like they want to continue to raise capital, which they
yes,
can.
And when they convert it to stock, if they do, that just dilutes the earnings of the company and the current shareholders. And then lastly, so here's what you get, 9.65, here's the bond, 9.625. Now, this is a tiny little gray media, that's the name of it, tiny little media company. That's what the credit quality is when you get up into that level. And I just don't want to have any part of that. That's called greed. That's like buying the high yield stocks. Oh, look, I'm getting and he's back. He's pumping that stuff every day. It's the trending article on Seeking Alpha, the high yield guy. Retire on the, you know, 8.9% dividend. Live off the dividends. The problem is there's two parts of that. There's also the stock that underlies those dividends. And if the stock goes down, that offsets the dividend yield. It's all about total return. We're out of time. If you'd like to get 4 weeks of the newsletter, see where we're at in the markets right now, see what we own in the markets right now as we get ready to begin a new year, you get 4 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. If you're ready to talk to us, we've had so many people write to us recently, Barry, and say, you know, I'd like to talk to you guys. I'm not happy with my money manager, or I'm getting ready to retire, or blah, blah, blah. And you can set up an appointment with us. Call us at 855-611-BEST. Talk to Edie. She'll find a time when you can talk to Barry or Jeff. 855-611-BEST or GundersonCapital.com. It's going to be a crazy week this week. Brace yourself for Wednesday. See you tomorrow.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.